With great power comes great responsibility.
Compromise where you can. Where you can't, don't. Even if everyone is telling you that something wrong is something right, even if the whole world is telling you to move, it is your duty to plant yourself like a tree, look them in the eye and say no, you move.
Never step onto the battlefield of ideas unprepared. Before you enter the fray, you need a plan. And there's no better place to get one than right here on Tactics with host Caleb Colquitt. The Situation Room goes live now on News Radio 1440.
Welcome in, everybody. Thank you so much for being with us on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and Periscope. We are supposedly broadcasting on Facebook now. We apologize for that snafu. We got in touch with some of the people, and by we, I mean me, because I am my entire staff. We got in touch with some of the people that handled the streaming service, and apparently the snafu with Facebook has been resolved. If you did happen to miss that episode, you can go and check it out on YouTube. It's available there. But for everybody that is listening to us now, we certainly appreciate you joining us regardless of what venue you're on. We're glad to be back on Facebook on News Radio 1440's page and the Tactics Facebook page. So thank you so much for being with us today. Lots of local news to get to today, but we're going to primarily focus on one story. Representative John Rogers, you may remember him. We've been talking about him a lot the past two or three days. He was featured prominently on our Best Of episode on Saturday and Sunday on News Radio 1440, which airs in the morning and the afternoon. He was the one that got infamous, even amongst Democrats, for saying that when it comes to abortion, you just kill babies now or kill them in the electric chair. You're going to kill them one way or the other, then doubled down, referred to the president's son. Again, I'm quoting him. I'm not using my own words here. Referred to him as retarded and crazy and caught a lot of backlash for that. So John Rogers, representative from Birmingham in the Alabama House, somebody that you're probably familiar with based on the news cycle of the past three or four days, he has now come out against Doug Jones. Doug Abortion Jones and John Rogers are in the middle of a fight. And this is somebody that if you understand their background and know sort of the history there, Doug Jones, remember, got famous as an attorney in Birmingham that was the one that helped try the church bombing in Birmingham. Been to that church before, the one where those children got caught in the bombing, and he was the one that helped prosecute the pieces of human debris that were involved in that church bombing. So that's really where Doug Jones kind of got thrust into the spotlight, and now we have John Rogers, who's been a friend of his for a very long time. He and Doug Jones are no longer getting along, and this was all revealed in a very lengthy interview, which I believe lasted almost an entire hour, when it came to Talk 99.5, Matt Murphy's channel, one of our sister stations, broadcasting out of Birmingham. And we're just going to pull a couple of pieces from the interview from the other day. And this is a quote from him. He called me twice. He told me, "John, I know you're right, but I have to come out against you," Roger said. I said, "Okay, fine. If it's going to help your campaign, do that. That's the kind of guy I am." Now, this is something that Doug Jones apparently believed was going to go no further than this, that he believed this was going to be a confidential call, and there's no reason that he wouldn't believe that. Because remember that Rogers is somebody that Doug Jones has been buddies with for a very long time. And they kind of run in the same circles. They've been Democrats in Birmingham. They've been established there for a number of years. Rogers has been there for, I believe he's been in the representative for Birmingham for 36, maybe 37 years. So longer than I've been alive, John Rogers has been influential in the politics of Birmingham. And because of that, he and Doug Jones have been longtime friends. That was according to both him and Jones in the past. So this connection apparently runs pretty deep and goes back a long time, which I do think it's telling. And I think that this is accurate, that when Doug Jones refers to himself as a moderate when it comes to abortion in Alabama, and then refers to himself as a radical when he's trying to fundraise everywhere else, and talks about how far to the left that he is, I think that it's very telling here that Rogers mentions that Jones told him that he was right. And this is really something that goes back to, I think, just sort of a characteristic of many in the Democrat Party. And I'm not talking about the rank and file people who vote Democrat, because if we're to believe the latest public opinion polls when it comes to things like abortion, the current stance of the Democrat Party is wildly out of step with the average American. In fact, you're looking at how all the Democrats, except for a couple in the U.S. Senate, opposed a measure that would have ended abortion after 25 weeks, ended those third trimester abortions. And only a few Democrats could get on board with that and were able to vote in favor of it. And to put that into perspective, that is a view that is held by only 13% of the American population, according to the most recent polls. Most Americans, even pro-choice Americans, even Americans that want abortion to be legal, don't agree with third trimester abortions. And we're one of only 6 countries in the entire world that allows for a third trimester abortion without any restrictions, at least on the federal level. Now, it's true that states set their own restrictions on that state by state, and that's a really good thing. Unless, of course, you're living in New York, which is now any time up until birth. But my point is, on the federal level, there's no protection that gets any stronger than that. And this is something that, granted, Doug Jones wouldn't vote for the infanticide, but he did vote to protect babies that are already born, but he voted against regulating abortion after 25 weeks, making sure that that was outlawed nationwide. So this is obviously something that Doug Jones is pretty bad on. There's a reason they call him Abortion Jones. He is radically to the left, especially being somebody from Alabama. He's to the left of most Democrat voters. He's to the left of the vast majority of the American population when it comes to abortion. And so the idea that he would tell John Rogers that he actually believes that he's right, not really something that surprises me. I had some people, and people that I trust, people that I really care about, say on here that I don't know whether or not this is actually true. Because Rogers does have motivation to lie. And Rogers has always been a snake in the grass. He's always been somebody that's mentally unstable. I mean, just looking at... The thing is, there were a lot of people that I don't think were all that surprised hearing Rogers say this, because Rogers has been this way his entire career. This time, it just happened to be on camera, and it happened to get a lot of national acclaim. Rogers is known for saying stuff like this. It just so happened to be picked up by the media this time. And so what we're looking at now is, I think, a gaffe, which for the Democrats typically is when one of their members accidentally tells the truth. And that's what's going on here. Whether or not this conversation happened exactly the way Rogers said it did, I don't know. I mean, unless he's got it recorded somewhere, there's no way to prove that. But the point is, I don't think that it's outside the realm of possibility that he is either lying outright or at least embellishing a great deal. I don't know if that's true or not. But I do know, based on Jones' voting record, and I do know based on some of the things that Jones himself has said about abortion in the past and the way that he has voted on abortion, that him being basically aligned with Doug Jones on the issue of abortion, Jones and Rogers being pretty much on the same level when it comes to abortion, wouldn't surprise me. And Jones thinking that it was a confidential conversation that went pretty well up until that point, saying that he actually believed that Rogers was right when it came to abortion and just thought that the optics were bad and thought that it made him and the Democrats look bad, which, by the way, another quote kind of suggests that too a little later on. That, to me, seems perfectly plausible. And another thing that's important to remember too, generally speaking, when people say things very specifically, it's not that you know for a fact that that's, you know, whether or not that's a lie or the truth. But based on the detail and based on sort of the voice that is used, and by that I don't mean the cadence or anything like that, I'm saying you can tell whether or not the expression sounds like something that the other person would have said. I don't know that that's a great meter to look at here to try to measure and see whether or not Doug Jones actually said what he did. But as I said, I think that at the very least, this comment is based in truth, if maybe embellished a bit. And would Doug Jones have ever said that in front of a crowd? No. Would he ever have said that in front of a camera? Absolutely not. But would he have said it to a person that he believes is his political ally and has been friends with him for a really long time that he didn't think was ever actually going to reveal that? Yeah. I think that that's perfectly reasonable to believe that. Now, it's his word against Jones, and Jones hasn't come out and denied it yet. We don't know. He may have since I came on the air. But to my knowledge, Jones has never actually come out and denied that he did say that Rogers was right on abortion. I imagine that he will. And at that point, it's still just his word against his. But whether or not he actually said it, the way that Doug Jones has conducted himself specifically on the issue of abortion makes me think that whether or not he actually said that he thought that Rogers was right, he probably believes it. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all. So there's another part of this conversation that I think is interesting. And this is, of course, Representative John Rogers sort of giving us a recreation of how that conversation went. And here it is. Quote, John, be quiet, shut up. You're killing me. He even said that I don't speak for Alabamians. I never said I spoke for Alabamians. I speak for my district. Well, that's certainly true. And of course, the urban districts like Birmingham are going to be far more liberal than the other sections of Alabama. And when you're looking at the two men, granted, I'm not trying to morally justify either of their positions. I'm just saying that it's not John Rogers' job to represent Alabamians. It is John Rogers' job to represent Birmingham and his district. It is Doug Jones' job to represent Alabamians. He is the senator for the entirety of the state, and he is our representative there in the Senate. So if you're comparing the two, then what Rogers is supposed to be doing, the people he's supposed to be representing, I'm not saying that the people of Birmingham believe and all agree with what he would have said, obviously. But what I'm saying is, if you're asking which of these two men is more out of step with the people that they are supposed to represent, I think you would have to say Jones is the one that is far outside the norm when it comes to representing the state of Alabama as a whole. Rogers is probably out of step, but not by nearly as much when he comes to represent the city of Birmingham and the district surrounding that area. And so because of that, and when you really take that into consideration, if you're comparing the two, you would have to say that Rogers is doing a better job of representing the values of where he's from than Doug Jones is, at least in the capacity that these two men hold office right now. Now, another thing that I want you to notice about that quote is that Doug Jones doesn't seem to actually disagree with Rogers' position. He seems to more disagree with the way that he said it, the way that he presented himself. And you may recall when I first started talking about this, I believe on Thursday, I essentially said exactly that. That what is going on with John Rogers is he is the Democrat stance on abortion with the mask off. You see, Democrats hold the same position that he does. The difference is they try to dress it up with flowery language and try to sanitize it to make it more palatable to the voters that they're in favor of killing children. That's the difference. They want to dress it up and make it look good and basically, to borrow from a parable of Christ, really whitewash the tomb so it looks pretty on the outside so you ignore the fact that it's filled with dead men's bones. That's what's going on here. The difference is John Rogers showed us the bones. That's the only distinction. The bones are still there in both circumstances. The difference is John Rogers brought them to the surface. And Doug Jones is saying, no. If we want to get our agenda through, you got to pack those bones down. You got to make sure they don't see the bones. That's what's happening. Rogers and Jones, I think, are probably pretty close to the same when it comes to their stances on abortion. The difference is Rogers is a lot more honest about it. Rogers doesn't mind other people seeing it. And Doug Jones does. And that's really the distinction here. So now, the latest development, which this has just happened today, is that Representative Rogers has sort of had a falling out with Doug Jones. And in that interview I mentioned the other day, he said, Doug Jones was somebody I considered a close friend. And the interviewers there, I believe it was Matt, that asked, you mean is? And he says, no, was. And so he and Doug Jones have had a falling out over this issue specifically. Again, I don't think it's so much that they have a policy difference as it is they have a messaging difference. If you remember that last quote, you're killing me, you're killing me. In other words, you got to stop saying this because you're making Democrats look bad, especially in Alabama where abortion is very unpopular. And so Doug Jones is actually upset and complaining about him hurting his reelection bid, which is probably accurate, even though I don't know that Doug Jones is going to stand much of a chance of getting reelected anyway. But nonetheless, that seems to be what's going on here, is that Doug Jones is not upset with Rogers for what he said on a moral level, nor does he actually disagree with his position. He's worried that it may be hurting him politically, and that's why he's asking him to shut up. It's the same reason that other Democrats have decried him. Like I said, they were far more worried about and far more hesitant to support Rogers after he called the president's son retarded. Not because they think that Donald Trump Jr. shouldn't be called that, more that they don't like the fact that he used the word retarded. That seemed to be their big point of contention. Just like Governor Northam, the guy goes out, advocates for literal infanticide, and what they're worried about is that he may have worn blackface in a picture in a yearbook from his college. And it's the same thing with John Rogers. The guy goes out and is suggesting that we ought to be slaughtering people in the womb, specifically because they may not be as smart as other people. We go after people that are mentally disabled, that kind of thing. And what they're concerned about is, well, he used an offensive word. I mean, it is the epitome of straining at a gnat and swallowing a camel. Don't get me wrong, you don't want to eat the gnat either. But if you're comparing the two, I mean, let's be honest, one is far more wicked and desirable to get rid of than the other is. You don't strain at the gnat to swallow the camel. But nonetheless, now Rogers is vowing to primary Doug Jones. He has officially declared that he is going to be running for Senate against Doug Jones. Now, here's the thing. I think that this is more a stunt than anything, and I don't think that he's actually running for Senate because he wants to run for Senate or that he has much of a disagreement with the way Jones has conducted himself. I think what's actually going on here is that he's wanting to run against Jones because he feels personally slighted by somebody whom he considered a friend. But there is another theory, and I don't typically like to engage in conspiracy theories. I'm just asking you to consider this. Is it also possible that his run is completely crafted? That he specifically set himself up as being as radical on abortion as a person can possibly be, and then runs against Doug Jones to make his position look more moderate? Now, I think that that's something to be concerned about, whether or not it was planned or whether it just on Jones' part happens to be a happy accident. But if you're running against somebody that is that radical on the issue of abortion, all of a sudden Jones looks much more moderate. It was the same thing that I suggested on the other side with Richard Shelby and Jeff Sessions. When you're looking at Richard Shelby and Jeff Sessions, Shelby looks like a rhino. When Jeff Sessions goes to be the Attorney General and you get Doug Jones instead, oh my gosh, Richard Shelby looks like Ted Cruz. I mean, he looks like the most conservative out of conservatives. Nobody has benefited more from Doug Jones being a senator than Richard Shelby. And I'm not saying that Richard Shelby orchestrated that or he wanted that or any of those things. All I'm suggesting is whether it was, you know, even though I don't think that he had anything to do with that whatsoever, he is the beneficiary of it. And he does look far more conservative because of that. By contrast, apply that to the situation that we're looking at now. If you've got somebody as radical and frankly incompetent as John Rogers running against Doug Jones in the primary, on the Alabama stage in the general, that sets him up to look much more like a moderate, that he's the more moderate of the two candidates despite being incredibly liberal I mean, the guy has a voting record to the left of Elizabeth Warren and Cory Booker. This is not somebody that has any conservative values or represents Alabama's values at all. But if he's running against somebody as crazy as John Rogers, he looks much more like a moderate blue dog Democrat. I'm not saying that this is absolutely the way that it's going. I'm not saying that it necessarily was planned. I guess you could kind of think of it as being planned, that they orchestrated this whole thing, and because they're buddies, he asked John to do something crazy, and then he'll look more moderate by comparison. It seems a little too spontaneous to me for that to be the case. But either way, that is an effect that is going to be felt, that people are going to view Doug Jones as a more sensible, moderate Democrat because he's having somebody like John Rogers run against him. And so, either way, I think that Doug Jones benefits from this because there's virtually no chance that John Rogers, not just because of his abortion comments, but just as a politician in general, there's virtually no chance whatsoever that John Rogers actually winds up doing well in the primary or actually being a threat to him being the Democrat that is going to be challenging the Republican for the Senate in 2020. I mean, the chances of that are almost nothing. And so because of that, I think that he's going to reap all of the benefits with virtually no risk. But that's really what it all comes down to in the end, is that Rogers created a gaffe by telling the truth. He is the Democrat Party stance on abortion with the mask ripped off. That's what a lot of the Democrats in power, again, not the voters, not the rank and file people, the actual Democrats that hold office, that is their stance on abortion, and they're mad at John Rogers for talking about what's not supposed to be talked about, for revealing what he really is and what a lot of them really are as well. That's the reason people are upset with him. Furthermore, I contend that the left as a general rule is getting more brazen when it comes to the issue of abortion. And this is just another example of it. I mean, we could go back over the past several months and look at the governor of Virginia, Northam, we just talked about that, him calling for actual infanticide after the baby is born, that there's supposed to be a conversation that takes place as to whether or not they keep the baby. We see the new pro-abortion bills that have been popping up in several states. We saw the Empire State Building lit up pink, celebrating this new abortion bill that allows abortion all the way up into the time of birth. I mean, just all of these insanely radical things on the abortion front, that the Democrat Party as a whole is trying to move further left on the issue of abortion, and they're getting more brazen and more vile about it. And this next guy, Brian Sims, I believe that's his name, Brian Sims of Pennsylvania, a representative in the House there, this is not some random activist. This is a guy that actually holds political office in the state of Pennsylvania. And we see him just harassing and going after a woman that is protesting in front of a Planned Parenthood. She's by herself. And he's, I tell you what, rather than me describing it, just watch.
Hi, everyone. Representative Brian Sims here. And I'm once again out in front of Planned Parenthood of Southeastern Pennsylvania. Today's protester. Now, she is an old white lady who's going to try to avoid showing you her face. But the same laws, luckily, that protect her from being out here also protect me from showing you who she is. And so my hope is that you'll donate $100 for every extra hour that this woman is out here telling people what's right for their bodies. So I have a couple questions for you, ma'am. How many children have you clothed today? I'm sorry, I missed your answer. How many children have you clothed today? How about how many children have you put shoes on their feet today? Have you fed any children today, or have you just stood out in front of a Planned Parenthood shaming people for something that they have a constitutional right to do? Huh? If you're here about the children, you can pray at home for children. It's probably the same place that you could feed a child, but you're not. Instead, you're out here shaming people for something that they have a constitutional right to do. Who would have thought that an old white lady would be out in front of a Planned Parenthood telling people what's right for their bodies? Shame on you. Shame on you for hiding your face at the same time that you're shaming other people. Again, the same laws that protect me protect you, and that's okay. You're allowed to be out here. That doesn't mean that you have a moral right to be out here. Shame on you. What you're doing here is disgusting. This is wrong. You have no business being out here. Hi, everybody. Thank you for being here. Yep. Disgusting. So do me a favor, please. If you're watching this, Planned Parenthood of Southeastern Pennsylvania is one of the most heavily protested Planned Parenthoods in the country, and they deserve your support. These are the kind of attacks that we can expect on Planned Parenthoods in the current administration. Shame on you, ma'am, for standing out here thinking you know what's right for other people's bodies. Shame on you. What you're doing here is disgusting. It's an attack on common sense. It's an attack on the Constitution. It's an attack on the rights of every single person coming here. And don't convince yourself that what you're doing isn't extremely racist. How dare you? This is grotesque. Actually, you're doing the right thing. Let's keep walking down the block. We can talk about this. We can talk about your Christian faith, about how your Christian faith believes in shaming people, about how your Christian faith believes in telling people that you know what's right for their bodies, about how your Christian faith tells you that you know what's right for their families. Shame on you. Shame on you.
Camera out of my face.
No, no. The same rights that allow you to be out here allow me to be out here. Shame on you. You have a problem protesting in public? Don't protest in public. If you know who this woman is, and if you can give me her address, we'll protest out in front of her home. Let's go protest out in front of her house and tell her what's right for her body.
All right. Now, you notice that there were quite a few, and I made them evident because you can watch the whole video. You notice there were quite a few edits that I had to do for time. That's because this goes on for 8 minutes. And remember, he's the one doing the taping. It's not like somebody caught him on camera. He's the one holding the camera, proud of what he's doing, as he's accosting an old lady and trying to berate her and browbeat her, essentially. And he's standing out there. The reason that I had to make so many cuts is because it's an 8 minute long thing, and this continues to go on. You can watch the whole thing online. It won't be hard to find it all, I'm sure. But one thing, I wanted to bring up a few things. First of all, this idea of, he says, it's wrong for you to shame people, and your faith teaches you to shame people. And then he says, shame on you. Well, if shaming people is wrong, aren't you trying to shame her? So your problem isn't with the shame itself. The problem is you and she have a disagreement over what is shameful. See, I think that belittling somebody and berating them in public, I think that's shameful. I think that standing out trying to inform people that they don't have to commit this heinous act against God, I think that's not shameful at all. And so let's have that discussion as opposed to you just yelling and berating her. And you'll notice that the woman doesn't even fight back, which we'll get to in a second. One claim that I think is very ironic is he's referring to her as extremely racist. He says, make no mistake that what you're doing is extremely racist. There's a couple of problems with that. First of all, Planned Parenthood itself, the organization that he is defending and trying to get people to donate to, was founded by somebody that was a Klan sympathizer who went and spoke at Klan rallies. And somebody that believed it was their mission and said that the mission of Planned Parenthood was to wipe black people off the face of the earth, referred to them and Jews and other minority races as human weeds. And that's the organization that you're defending and that you're trying to raise money for. Do you see the healthy dose of irony in that? And another thing that I wanted to bring up too. If you're looking at proportionately how Planned Parenthood and abortion as a whole affects people, it affects the black community far more than it does the white community. In fact, if you're looking at it demographically, black people make up roughly 13 to 14% of the population. They make up about 30 to 35% of all abortions. In fact, in New York City, if you were a black child, you were more likely to be aborted than you were to be born. That's how high the numbers are when it comes to black people, when abortions. And I want to ask this question, and people have accused me of this again. It's because this is clearly a person that has a hard time thinking for himself, because all he knows how to do is throw out a bunch of buzzwords. He does not really he's not actually rationing out his arguments themselves. He's just throwing out a bunch of buzzwords, and even though there's no aspect of this that seems racist on the surface, he's accusing her of somehow being a racist. And when he does that, let's also remember that under this woman, presumptively, under her worldview where abortion was not legal, black people would be a far larger portion of the population than they are now. That's one of the things that I've actually brought up before. If we're looking at Caleb Colquitt's worldview, and we had abortion outlawed and had since Roe v. Wade, there would be approximately 20 million more black people in America. Yeah, I'm fine with that. I would love that to be the case. Nobody deserves to be destroyed in the womb, the place that where they should be the safest. And so this guy referring to her as racist while he is defending an organization that has killed 20 million black children, that to me is absurd. Under my worldview and under the worldview of the pro-life movement, if you were to enact the policies that we're suggesting, there would be 20 million more black children alive today in the United States of America. Think about that for a second. And another thing that I found very ironic about that is he refers to her as a racist, and yet you'll notice several times in that video, and even more if you're looking at it from the unedited version, he refers to her as an old white woman. And he just says it with such disdain, an old white woman. That's the definition of an ad hominem attack. He's attacking her based on her age and based on her race. And usually when it comes to racial relations, the best way to determine whether or not something is racist is flip the race and see if it would be acceptable in the other way. Let's say, just for the sake of argument, that this lady happened to be black. Would it be okay for this guy to go out and say, look at this old black woman coming out telling people what they ought to do with her body. Shame on you. You're disgusting. Are you really going to sit there and tell me that you would be okay with that? That the people on the left would look at this guy and go, oh yeah, that's perfectly fine. No. This guy specifically is attacking this woman based on her race and based on her age, saying that because she's old and because she's white, well, her opinion doesn't matter. That's because of this weird intersectionality Olympics that we're involved in now, to where your opinion only matters if you can stack up a bunch of labels on top of yourself. That's saying, well, because she's white, she can't possibly be right on this. Because she's white, she can't possibly understand the intricacies of this. Because she's white, she's not smart enough to really understand this issue. That's degrading and racist. And so ironically, while he is trying to claim that she's a racist, he's the one that's actually calling out her race and trying to make that an issue in this discussion. It's so morally reprehensible what he's doing. And what's crazy about this is, I don't know this lady, I don't know much about her faith or anything, because she doesn't really speak much in this video. You saw the only part that I actually remember her speaking in. But do you notice that she doesn't fight back? That she kind of just sits there and quietly walks around and is praying to herself? She doesn't fight back. The only point that she gets agitated is when he tries to stick the camera right there in her face, and you can see how close the camera is, how close he got to her, trying to stick the camera right in her face, which, by the way, is textbook harassment. But nonetheless, when that happens, she does get a little testy, but nonetheless, when that does occur, every other time, she still is not fighting back. She's still not trying to engage him. First of all, I think that that's because she realizes that this is not somebody that is interesting in actually hearing her views. I think that she understands that her role there is to talk to these young women that are going through a very difficult time, that are, you know, not understandably or justifying what they're doing or the choices that they're making, but they are in a difficult situation or they wouldn't be going there in the first place. See, I think that she understands that her purpose there is to help them, not to argue with him or make a political statement. I think that she really understands that that's her role. This guy clearly is only there for the politics. He is only there to make a political statement. Because you heard him right there, he's trying to raise money for a political group that agrees with him. Probably one that gives to his campaign, I would imagine. I don't know that for sure, but it wouldn't surprise me if Planned Parenthood, who donates a lot of money to politicians, would be donating to somebody like him. And so this is somebody that is essentially raising money for Planned Parenthood and possibly sort of in a roundabout way raising money for himself while he's there, making a political statement. She's not doing that. She's more worried about the people that are coming in. She's not there to have a political debate with the guy. And yet he continues to go after and go after. Even if you have a relative, for example, that you politically disagree with. For example, obviously I'm pro-life. Obviously I'm pro-life. But let's reverse it. Let's say that there was one of the women's health clinics that don't give people abortion. And by the way, I do actually have several relatives that are pro-choice. Let's say that one of my pro-choice relatives were out there protesting, and a Republican lawmaker showed up and did this exact same thing, but in reverse to this person. That would be a despicable display for anybody. Can you imagine if one of your female relatives had to endure this and went through this and saw the rudeness and the vitriol that this guy had for this woman? And another thing, too, in a different video, in a different venue, he also offered $100 for the addresses of these three teenage girls that were also protesting in front of this Planned Parenthood. And the reason that he did is because he wanted, and this is his words, not mine, you just heard him say the same thing about this old woman that was in the video. The reason that he wanted that is because he wanted their home addresses so he could show up at their houses and protest them there and harass them there to scare them and to scare their families. So this guy, who is claiming to be a feminist, claiming to be a champion for women, is there harassing young teenage girls and old ladies, and doing so specifically trying to intimidate them into silence, trying to keep them from speaking out. Is there anything less manly or anything less feminist than trying to shut women up because they disagree with you? I think that's pretty much one of the first things when you're looking in the sexist handbook of things that men do that are not, you know, not feminist or don't care about what a woman says. They try to scare or intimidate them into not speaking. And yet this guy claims that he's a champion for women. It really does not make any sense. And does this guy really think that he's big and tough because he's shouting down elderly ladies and teenage girls and threatening to have people show up at their house to harass them? I can't think of anything less manly than that. All right, I need to cool down here for a second, so let's go to the phones. Good afternoon. What's on your mind?
Hey, good afternoon.
Hey, what are you thinking about this? Were you able to hear the story from earlier?
I wasn't able to hear the story from earlier, but there's a question that I thought about when you were going through your dialogue about this.
Uh-huh.
And you may not know the answer to, but just in general, who has more political power and money or funds to give to organizations, Planned Parenthood or the NRA?
I don't know off the top of my head who donates more, but I think the last time I checked, and granted, I'm going off of memory here, I believe the NRA is somewhere in the low hundreds. So when you're looking at campaign donors, they would roughly be somewhere around like 120, 130, something like that. I think that that's where they ranked as far as political donations. Now, it's true that I think it was 7 or 8 out of the top 10 gave almost exclusively to Democrats. So there is definitely more money on the left. But I don't remember Planned Parenthood was not one of the top 10, and I don't remember how far up on that echelon that they ranked. I would not be surprised at all if they gave more money than the NRA, though. Of course, it also helps that they get $500 million from taxpayers, too.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's one of the things you have to think about. But one of the reasons I bring that up, of course, is that if you listen to the left, you would think that the NRA is the most powerful political organization in the world.
Yeah. What's really funny to me is they refer to them as buying politicians. If you're if you're looking at the amount of money that they're giving, there is, whether you're talking about right or left, there is no way that the amount of political donations they give would come anywhere close to buying a politician.
No, they have some influence, of course, but
all
organizations do. But that's just something, and of course, the story you've been talking about today, to get back to that, it's reprehensible, the kind of things that have been stated there, and it's becoming more typical of left leanings. And in my lifetime, I remember when left leaning people, progressive people, and we used to call them liberals, we used to say that about them, they may have been different and believe in more socialism and that kind of thing, more government intervention, more government regulation. But they, for the most part, were decent people. They were looking out for people, but they weren't doing it in the way in which, and didn't have the kind of philosophies that they have now. And you didn't have to wonder about whether they favored our country or had patriotism. But now you wonder about that at all.
What's your analysis of people just sort of out there that are not in the political realm? In other words, just random Americans that happen to vote Democrat or be liberal. Do you think that they've fallen into some of that too, or do you think this is primarily something with elected officials and activists?
Oh, I think they're being led in that direction.
Okay.
Here's the thing you have to think about. Most Americans today don't think about all of the issues that are brought up in the media. Now they're out,
that's
they
true.
Have their kids, they're raising their, they're trying to make it in life and have 1,000 things to do and that sort of thing. They don't have time to think about all of the political rhetoric that's going on, and they don't know what senator said this or representative said this necessarily. And they get bits and pieces, and they don't even think about politics in many instances up until the time of the election. Because when I talk to people, they don't have to know what's going on, and they're more worried about entertainment, musicians and ball games and sports, that kind of thing.
Well, I think that there's always
going on than are the other than the a lot of things we discuss.
Well, I think there's always been an aspect of that, and I believe that there have always been some people that are kind of political nerds, and then you have the average person that kind of keeps up with it. But I think it's gotten worse, and I just want to bounce this idea off of you and get your reaction to it. I think what has happened is that the more ridiculous it's gotten, and I mean this on both sides, and the more heated that some of these discussions have gotten, the more the average person just doesn't want to pay attention to it. And so people that used to be more knowledgeable about it and weren't necessarily political nerds and listened to it all the time, but kind of kept up with the news and at least knew the basics, are starting to just tune it out completely and say, I don't want anything to do with that anymore.
And so it continues.
I think it sort of continues in this vicious cycle to where, because that happens, the only voices that are left are the really radical ones, which then ratchet up the heat even more and then alienate even more average people. And so we've continued down this road for a few decades now, and that's how we've gotten where we are.
Well, the more sensational you can be in social media, you can feel pretty powerful if you're able to get a lot of people to react. And I think that's fueled a lot of it, because people can think they're pretty important when they put an outlandish view out there on Facebook or Twitter or anything like that, and they get a lot of attention because of it, and they feel powerful and they do it more. And I do think that's the case, and then I do think there's a large segment that avoid that kind of stuff. But people can, everyone's a showman now.
Yeah.
Or they can be. I mean, they certainly can be, because they can get a lot of attention out there with what they do or what they say. And at one point, of course, it wasn't like that. I mean, I think the new media that we all have access to, and I think that has a profound impact on people's views and what they do and how they interact. I mean, it does. There's no question.
No, I agree, and I think that's definitely a contributing factor. Thank you so much for your call, and I do appreciate it, as always. I tell you what we're going to do is, it looks like we're pretty close to the end, and we're just going to go ahead and go to the chaplain's report. We'll have to do the Daily Dose of Stupid tomorrow, because frankly, I didn't realize how late it had gotten, and I have a baseball game to do tonight. The Biscuits are playing the Shuckers, so if you do want to check that out, that's on our sister station, Sports Radio 740, and the Atlanta Braves will be right here on News Radio 1440. So if you do want to watch that, you do want to watch and keep an ear on those games, we're your baseball headquarters right here at Cumulus Montgomery. So because of that, we're going to go ahead and go to the chaplain's report.
In 1775, the Continental Congress created the Chaplain Corps. Under the command of General George Washington, each soldier was required to attend worship service every Sunday. While other armies advanced on their feet, Washington's troops advanced on their knees. It's time for the Chaplain's Report with Caleb Colquitt on tactics.
Chaplain's Report today comes from the book of Daniel, and we're going to specifically be looking in Daniel 6, continuing the series. that we started on that. And just so you recall, just to give you kind of a quick primer on what's going on, King Darius has taken over the kingdom. The Medes and the Persians, rather than the Babylonians, are now running things. And because of that, that's caused a sort of fruit basket turnover. It's kind of like, imagine when we have a turnover of presidency, you have a new attorney general and a new secretary of state and all those other things. But imagine that on steroids. And also imagine it to where they keep a lot of the people that used to be there. And so they're just sort of reshuffling the deck and reorganizing everybody. And Daniel finds a lot of favor with King Darius. King Darius seems to really like him. He's even considering making him the number two guy over the entire kingdom. And there are other people that are in this political realm that see this and are thinking, we got to do something to get rid of this Daniel guy, because he is really kicking our butts when it comes to gaining favor with the king. And if we don't do something, then he is going to get this position and we're just going to get lesser positions. And so because they all wanted the position, they sort of decide to create an alliance and figure out a plan to get rid of Daniel. Well, they get together, they try to put their heads together to figure something out, and they said, it doesn't matter what we do, we can't find any dirt on this guy. We can't find any reason that the king shouldn't pick Daniel, so the only thing that they can think of is to use his religion against him. They can't go after his character. They can't suggest that he's a bad guy or that he's bad at his job. So they fall back on the only thing that they can think of, which is to attack the man's religion, and we see that plan sort of take shape here in the book of Daniel, chapter 6, verses 7 through 8. All the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the high officials and the governors have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that everyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days, shall be cast into the lion's den. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document, so that it may not be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which may not be revoked. Now, to really understand what's going on here, you do need a little bit of historic context. The way that the government worked with the Medes and the Persians is once a decree was issued, that was it. Nobody, not even the king, could undo once he had signed it. And so they know this, and that's the reason they're urging this to take place. But I want you to notice the way that they go about it. Because the method here, it says something about them and their motives. But it wouldn't have worked if it hadn't been for the king being able to be duped. And why was it so easy for them to trick the king, who really likes Daniel? You see, the reason they were able to pull this off is because the king was prideful. The reason they were able to make this work so easily is because they appealed to the king's pride and his sense of greatness. The same pride that we've seen that plagued Belshazzar and Nebuchadnezzar, his predecessors. What they did was they appealed to him and talked about how great he is and how wonderful he is and how he's so great that nobody should really be worshiping or making any kind of decree towards anybody other than you. Nobody should be asking any god for anything other than you. And you see a little bit of that playing in to where in the ancient world it was not that uncommon for rulers to be thought of as gods. You can see that ranging all the way back to the Epic of Gilgamesh, where they refer to just the royals, not everybody else, just the royals as being the descendants of God. Ancient Egypt, they would refer to the pharaohs as the sons of Ra. Now, the regular Egyptians, they weren't. But the royals and the members of the royal family, they were seen as kin to the gods. And that's what's going on here, is that this is probably a culture that has some kind of emperor or kingdom worship. And so because of that, they think of Darius, and Darius seems to kind of think of himself as at least being on somewhat even footing with the supernatural beings and the gods. And so he issues this decree that if anybody gives any kind of petition to any god other than me, again, kind of placing himself in the place of a god, then they are to be punished and they are to be thrown into the lion's den. And the reason that he was so sure of himself, the reason that he was so confident and thought that this was such a good idea that he put it into a proclamation that could not be revoked, that not even he could undo according to their legal system. Is it because he believed they were right? They believed that he really was worthy of worship and praise, and for nobody else in the kingdom, they didn't need any god. They had Darius. You don't need to pray to a god. You already have Darius, and so if you have any request, obviously King Darius can do anything that your gods can do. So why not make him the sole person that you can go to a petition with? You see, these people were very sneaky and crafty, and the way that they were able to pull it off is because Darius thought way too much of himself. So often in our lives, pride goes before the fall. So often in our lives, we forget to consider that we may have our own shortcomings and fallibilities, and maybe that's the reason that we ought to proceed with caution. In this particular instance, Darius doesn't have any of that. He doesn't have that conscience in his head saying, no, this isn't right. You shouldn't do this. And because of that, as we'll see a little bit later on, somebody that he cared a great deal about was punished. Somebody that he cared a great deal about was put into great danger because of his own carelessness and his pride. And isn't that something that we should caution ourselves against? That unlike King Darius, what we need to do is to be humble so that we will not allow our pride to guide us into a place where there will be danger. Because eventually what happens here is that Darius is, of course, injured by the thought of Daniel being killed. But it also would have hurt other people. That his own lack of awareness and lack of humility could have cost people their lives. And he didn't have the foresight or the humility to actually see that. See, when we're talking about pride, the reason it's so deadly is because it not only blinds us to our own ambition, it not only blinds us to our own fallibility, it blinds us to what that fallibility or those shortcomings in our own lives can do to other people. It blinds us to the possibility of harming others when we should be helping them. And it places us at the center of the universe. It puts so much emphasis on us, like Darius did in this decree, that we forgot to focus on who is really worthy of these petitions, who is really worthy of worship. It's the person that others should really be putting their faith in, and the ones that we should be putting our faith in. We should never be like King Darius and say, look, if you have problems, just come to me, I'll solve them. Because let's say that someone has a problem that legitimately can be solved by us. Wouldn't anything that we have to offer them be something that God originally gave us anyway? Wouldn't any gift or any wisdom, anything that we have that we could offer to help them with, it would be something that originally God gave us in the first place? We're just stewards of his blessings. We're just the people that happen to be able to tell other people, you know, whether it comes to the gospel or whether it comes to just general life advice, the reason that we're able to help others is because God has blessed us to begin with. Let us never forget that truth, as Darius did. Stay the course, friends.
Tactics is a production of News Radio 1440 and Cumulus Media Montgomery. Any opinions expressed on this program are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Cumulus Media. The theme song for Tactics is 6 Foot Town by Big and Rich. Graphics by Jessica Dawson. Broadcast studios provided by Cumulus Media Montgomery. Location studios provided by the Dalreda Church of Christ. Copyright 2019.